morning, and good morning to everybody. Unfortunately, I read up the masters of which venue we can use, so apologies for the venue. This afternoon things will be a little bit better, a whole lot better this afternoon. But for now, until lunchtime, we're going to have to make do with this venue. So apologies for anybody that is slightly inconvenient. Honourable members, you recall that yesterday we agreed that we will push on and hopefully conclude with all the inputs by lunchtime. That we will then all have to go into the house at 2 o'clock for the budget, and 15 minutes after the house adjourns, we will reconvene in M46, just to give members an opportunity to, what should we say, half an hour? Because we'll have to go and get documents and so on. So half an hour after the house rises, after the budget speech, we will reconvene in M46. So that would be somewhere between 3:30 and 4 o'clock, but half an hour after we arrive, we will reconvene in M46. And the first thing we'll do, depending how far we are today, is to quickly go through the what we call interim report. But the interim report obviously will then be there will be an addition of what we are working on today and yesterday. Cindy and them indicate to me that by the time we reconvene, they would have affected the changes that we agreed to yesterday. So we'll quickly go through that document to make sure that we are happy that, in fact, the changes have been affected as the committee had suggested. And that shouldn't take us too long. Thereafter, we will look and agree on whether there are any adjustments to the observations that we have set out. If there are, we'll affect those quickly. And then we'll get on to the recommendations. So that's how we see ourselves proceeding today. Yesterday, honourable members, we indicated that what is outstanding is a briefing from the TAPO and the MOI, the consideration of the minister's response, and a briefing from Advocate Bonara on areas of possible conflict. I don't see Honourable Bonara here. Advocate Bonara here. So those would be the three. We'll deal with the SABC. But, you know, on consideration, Honourable Members, and we're putting it to you, it doesn't really matter to me. I think maybe I was not thinking clearly yesterday. When I kept on insisting that we must get the MOI before we do the minister, as if that MOI is going to influence the minister's input. Because remember, we're dealing with the minister's input regardless of whether we agree or disagree with it.
Yeah.
So the MOI doesn't have to be first or second or last, because those are two different issues altogether. The MOI presentation that we'd asked the TAPO to do for us really is to assist us with our observations and our recommendations, and not to affect the minister's input. And that's something that maybe we or I confused yesterday. So let's finish all the inputs. SABC, minister, out of the way. MOI, because the MOI is really for our own for our own purposes when we get to recommendations and observations. You then get the MOI break for the budget and come back to deal with the recommendations. Is that in order, Honourable Member? Mm-hmm. It is?
Yeah.
I thank you very much. I have not received any apologies. Yesterday, Honourable Mokwena indicated he was going to be late yesterday. I don't see him today, so I'm not sure. The Honourable Nkwankwa has apologized. So I'm assuming that other members will join us, and of course we have a standing apology for Honourable
Fandama,
I beg your pardon. Yes.
Chair, I'll be leaving to the lock-up and I'll join later. This old to me. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Singh will be, Mr. Swartz will be leaving us during the proceedings and join us later on. Everybody else should be here. Can we then, Honourable Members, unless I have it wrong, we should be on page 16 of our D report.
Yes.
And we should be dealing with 16.1.1. Again, Letapo and Bo, we'll be looking at you to make sure that what we've captured is in fact what is in the SAPC report and other members in the same light as we did it yesterday. Are there any comments on 16.1.1 on page 16, Honourable Members? Any amendments? Any comments? Or are you comfortable that that we captured Mr. Swan?
No, Chair. I just want to reiterate that the fact that we're only capturing certain parts, that's what we agreed on, doesn't mean that we haven't considered the whole submission. I've gone through it very carefully, and there's a lot that one could highlight in this, but we're only highlighting certain salient points. So it's important to emphasize that we are considering the full submission. Again, I think maybe it's important to just emphasize that at the outset, Chair.
Okay. But if there are salient points that members think we should add to enrich our document without replicating what has been submitted, remember you're free to suggest those then. 16.11.1, do members feel that there's anything that you would like to add to 16.11.1? And before we move on to Tapo and Bo, I'll look at you. If you shake your head, it means that we've also captured it accurately. Okay. If there's glaring errors, please indicate that to us. But I'm sure members would have picked that up themselves in their reading. All right. They're refuting a comment that we made in our report 1731. We're not arguing whether ours or theirs is right, but are we correct in capturing that they're refuting it, Mr. Singh?
Yeah, Chair, thank you very much. I think they've refuted, but they're also saying that the contract was only executed on 18 September 2015. So maybe we could add that.
Okay.
This is what they are saying.
All right. So it was not approved on the 31st of July 2015, but rather in September 2015 or whatever the date
was. 18th
September
2015.
18th of September 2015.
18th September 2015.
Okay, that's what All right. Anything else around Vision View?
Well, I mean.
Yes, sir.
Sorry. If you look at the report on page 1.
Their report.
They're on page 116. They're not disputing the fact that there was a round robin, but what they're saying was it was an addition, it was a further ratification of a round robin in a fully constituted meeting of the EXCO. I mean, that's what they're saying here. It seems to be confusing the practice which was developed by the SAP of going an extra mile and seeking a further ratification of the round robin in a fully constituted meeting of the EXCO. Now, the EXCO is also not the board. Isn't the EXCO,
it's not the board, it's the administration leadership.
So that's what they're saying.
So you're suggesting we put what in there?
Well, we're saying here, the SABC denies that Vision View contract is approved on this date and by a round robin. But they're saying, from what way I read it, and I may be wrong, that it was an additional sort of, the round robin was just was going the extra mile, as it was said, to seek further ratification. So there was a round robin, and that the EXCO had decided, from what I read here, the EXCO decided, and then they put it to the full board via a round robin. No, the EXCO is...
the EXCO decided and then took it
to the full board around. That's what I read here. I don't know if anyone else reads that.
Chair, go on.
What was good as I was taking it?
Let's give some wording.
Can I propose some wording where we... the contract was approved on 31 July 2015, as stated in paragraph of interim report, but then you add there, but the date... But it was approved on
18
September, full stop. You got that, full stop, and then you then explain. It also explains that in addition to the board's round robin, the decision was confirmed at a fully constituted meeting of the EXCO.
So after the interim report, we put full stop.
No, but was confirmed.
No, I'm saying the original one.
Yes, but you want to add what Mr. Singh says to that report, but was confirmed on
18
September 2015. Full stop. That's the SABC. So we say it also explains that in addition to the board's round robin decision. On this issue, it also explains that in addition to the board's round robin decision on this issue, comma, further ratification was obtained in an EXCO meeting. That's just explaining what this is.
We don't have to agree with this. Okay, before you do that, let's go to Roliwe and then to Killian.
Thanks,
on this
Chair.
Point, eh?
Yes, Chair. On page 116, I think if round robin, which promised the date, that approval on the 18th of September. So whatever we do in recrafting our funding, we make that by saying they did round robin on the 31st July, but what? Which was then approved on the 18th September. So
yes,
that's the sequence you catch it correctly.
Is that fine?
That's
Honorable Killian?
Yes, Chairperson, obviously we don't know where the agreement was signed, but I also find it strange that we're talking of ratification by the EXCO, because the EXCO cannot replace the board.
No. Remember, we're putting what they said.
Yeah.
We'll argue it differently. I mean, we'll argue when we have our thing. I agree with you, but this is what they say. We're trying to capture what they said. And I agree with you that there's no way that EXCO can overrule the board. But that is a debate for this afternoon.
Or that a round robin is appropriate.
Or whatever the case may be. That will discuss later. Cindy, if you try to capture it. Okay. Anything else on 16.12.1? No. Honourable members will make notes of these areas that we're going to put into the pot and debate later on, eh?
Yeah.
I'm hoping so. Excuse me. 16.13.1 on HR related matters. Any comment on 16.13.1? Honourable Killian.
Chairperson, I would suggest that it is correctly captured as in 16.13.1.
Okay. Honourable Scott? Do you have it? Mr. Michael, sir?
Sorry.
All right. 16.13.1. Yes, sir.
Chairperson, thank you very much. On 16.13.1, in the end, we've got, and therefore the board was party to the amendments of the MOI, as stated by the minister in her evidence. Correct, it's what they said. And also they refer to the board meetings of 29th June and that. 120.
Page
120. So they said the board was party to the amendments, as stated by the minister in evidence. And then they referred to attached minutes of the AGM and the board meetings. Is it necessary for us to put that down or the dates? Might not be really extremely relevant.
Well, then they're saying we could put as was confirmed by the minutes?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Okay.
As was confirmed by the minutes of the 4th of September?
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
16.13.2. What did our document say? Did our document say they denying that he was appointed as corporate?
Yes.
Did we say he was appointed?
He was.
I mean, our document is our document, because they're saying our document says appointed. They're saying it was not appointed, you are just returned.
What end is here? Our document says.
But it's fine, it doesn't matter what our document says, because, I mean, that's their point. As long as we can locate it in our document and they're not taking us on their own agenda. If we can locate it somewhere in our document, if you don't make reference to our document.
8.2.1
of our document. If it is in our document and they're referring or responding to our document, it's fine. Whether we agree or disagree with what they're saying is a different matter. As long as it is located somewhere in our document and they are responding and not introducing something new, I'm happy. So we're happy that they, in their document somewhere, are saying that he was not appointed, he was returned. Yes. Honourable Kosa, and then, yeah? Just on that point?
Chair, but my reading of 8.2.3 of the FADC on page
117
is confirming that he was actually appointed.
That's
if you read 8.2.3,
yes.
That's our version.
That's
a quote from the interim report.
Yeah. They're responding to that one. All right, so we're comfortable that it reflects their version. Thank you very much.
I'm just trying to see where that exact sentence is. Chair, I don't see, maybe Cindy can point us to the right paragraph, but I don't see where we said that Mr. Mosseneng was appointed permanently, which one are we on now? What's our place? Was permanently appointed...
In our document.
Yeah. there we go. Where we say he was permanently appointed to his previous position. What the SABC is saying that he wasn't appointed, he just returned to his previous position that he occupied.
That's the point I'm making. I'm sure someone we spoke to. If we hadn't spoken to it at all in our document we sent out, then maybe it was then your point is valid. But let's go through our report. I'm sure that we had spoken about it somewhere in our report. It certainly was a matter of discussion. Yes, we do. Human resources. We talk about COO. We talk about COO, we don't talk about corporate affairs. If you go to our page 45, maybe somewhere else. COO. Can we just flag that one?
Yeah,
can we just flag that one? We're trying to put it in our document.
Okay.
Certainly we spoke about the appointment of COO, and here that is wanting to see corporate affairs.
Yes.
Well, that chair, they're referring here in their document. Their document, where this comes from, is UD, our 8, paragraph 8, human resources related.
Our
so it must
eight.
Be in paragraph 8.2,
yeah.
Somewhere there.
8.2 in our document.
Because their report and their comment relating to this issue is follows where they actually quote these whole sections relating to the human resources. If you look on page 118 of the SABC report, that is extracts from our interim report. So the person that drafted our 16.13.2, where we quote the SABC, that is so it must be there in the interim report.
No, it's not.
Mr. Chair, are they not confusing?
No, it's not in our interim report.
822, where we say we're referring to the COO position, not the corporate affairs position.
Oh.
And we say there the last two words is permanent appointment, but that's for the COO.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the corporate affairs
position. That's what I understood.
But
let's
help us
and then
process. I think what we have to check here is that on page 120
of their response,
at the top there's a bullet referring to paragraph 8.2.12, 8.2.6. So it's a whole group of paragraphs.
Yeah.
And what they're saying is they make one general comment and then they quote the outcome of the court case, and they say that he was restored to employee, he should be placed in a position that he would have been put for the decision that he had been overturned. I mean, I've just loosely now read from it. But if you read that paragraph, it says, with regard to the matter of the appointment of the Simon as Group CE Corporate Affairs, the SABC draws the attention of the committee to the legal principle of status quo ante. What they're essentially saying is he was not appointed. So the capturing, that's just my point, the capturing of setting aside the appointment, he was not appointed but merely returned to his position. It's correctly captured. That's what I wanted to say as far as 16.13.2 is concerned. Because that's just a general comment. They refer to the whole group of paragraphs. And they say, I don't think it's wrong for us to have said that he was just restored. He was not appointed. But after the court case,
he was
just restored to his previous.
Yeah.
We can argue the pros and cons later, but that is from their document on page 120.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
No,
let's take commission and come back to you.
Chair, when I look at 16.32, I think we have captured it well. Because we say he was not appointed, we're taking it from them, but merely returned to the position. That's what they say.
Okay.
But we can flag it and come back to it later.
Before you come in, Honourable Waters, Cindy suggesting instead of us saying the SAB denied, we should be saying the SAB stated, because it's in their report. If you took away the word denied, I'd say this is what they stated.
Yeah, okay.
Because we don't make the assumption that he was permanently appointed as that other position.
Correct.
The corporate affairs, they're making that assumption.
Yeah.
But it is their submission, so we can capture that.
So we'll remove the word denied and say the entity stated,
yeah,
and we can point it to page
120. We can't say that. One issue changed the address to say the SABC stated that Mr. Motswenning was appointed. Then they go on to say he was not appointed.
Yeah.
So they
was
say
not appointed,
he was not appointed. So we can't say that he was appointed. So the word appointed is wrong then.
Yeah.
Stated.
Not appointed. They were not appointed.
Good.
If you look at 120.
Mr. Bessie,
Well, we've got to change that then. The SABC statement, Mr. Matsuneng returned to his position as Rupert did. He was not appointed. That's their version.
Honorable Cosman?
No, Chair. I honestly did not see anything wrong with the paragraph if you say they're denying that he was appointed.
Yeah.
I don't understand why are we changing deny.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what they are saying.
Let's flag it. Cindy is insisting, because we didn't say anything about corporate affairs, to say, to use the word deny is almost as if they're disputing what we put in our report, rather stated. But can get somebody to think about it. We'll put denied stroke stated until we come back tomorrow, until we finish, so that people can give Cindy the right phraseology. Is that okay? Some things that denied is fine. Some things that we say denied, it implies that we've said something about it. But it's very clear we never said anything about corporate affairs in our document. So those that are looking at it, please apply your mind and see if we can better craft that 16, 13, 2. 1633?
Honorable Phillips? I would like to suggest that we here use the word stated. SABC not pointed out that most witnesses, because they are saying which witnesses are they talking about. So they are pretty much just saying it is on 120. It is stated here, evidence at the SABC disposal indicates that most witnesses cited in the public protector report either denied participating or being interviewed by the public protector during the inquiry that resulted in the Wayne governance and ethics trial.
So,
now,
also pointed out in the change to state it.
Yeah, so the only thing is, if we say pointed out, then it means it is public knowledge. But they say they have information that people who participated denied. We don't have that information.
No, they never provided it.
So therefore, if we say the SABC stated that most witnesses,
it
is what they say.
I don't see any dissenting votes. Is that fine?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Anything else on 1313? Honorable Singh.
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. I think on 16.13.4, and if we refer to what they are saying in 8.3.2 on 120, I think they make a categoric statement that, well, I agree with in response to the claim that staff have been purged. The SAB highlights that the board was not required to ratify decisions to appoint or dismiss employees since this was an operational matter. This is what they are saying. Since this was an operational matter, and I think that's a categoric statement which we need to add.
So we take out and there?
No, and then I'm suggesting a full stop.
Yeah.
And then they further claim.
Hold on. Yeah. 16.13.4?
On their cross reference for 8.3.2. To add after employees, since this is an operational matter, this is what they are saying. Right. Then they further claim there had been valid reasons and merits for considering each case.
Okay.
Right. This is what they say.
Happiness? Yes? Thank you. Yes, ma'am?
Please, if I may have your indulgence. We were just deliberating here about the previous one.
The previous one?
16 point.
Well, before we go there, let's just say on which one are we dealing with now? So the
1634. 1634
we're done with, okay? Yeah. Let's go back to 1633, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, we were just talking and we were saying perhaps it would be a better. We have changed the word pointed out to stated, but we have now deliberated and we were thinking should it not be the SABC claims that most witnesses claim, or claims that most witnesses cited in the public protest report either denied participating. The reason being, if they say stated, it means it's a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas
if
we say they claim, then we have not verified the facts, and obviously they have not supplied such facts. They didn't bring any affidavit to that effect before us.
Right.
So perhaps the accurate word, operative word, should be claimed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Happy?
Chair, can I just understand, I've got no objection to that suggestion, but we are reflecting here what the SABC's version is. We're not accepting anything, so the fact that we changed that doesn't mean the fact is accepted as such, as is what the SABC is stating. Even if you say stated, claimed, whatever, it is reflecting what their report says. When we get to observations, we will then consider that. So, otherwise, if that argument is carried forward, then every fact that is stated here is accepted, which isn't the case. We are merely reflecting what the SABC's version is. I think maybe just a correction when you were motivating. Am I understanding you correctly?
Yeah.
Because you were concerned that it would then state as a fact. Well, that is a fact. That is the SABC's version. We can, at a later stage, say, but that's not the evidence we heard, or it is the evidence we heard.
Wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back to Killian to see if you're happy with it.
Yes? Yeah, Chairperson, I think maybe there's no need to split hairs on this one. We are alternating between stated and claimed, and I think there's nothing wrong with either of them when we refer to what they said. They either stated or they claimed. And I agree with Honourable Swart this. You know, we don't have to change it all to stated or all to claimed. But we can alternate between those two words.
I'm happy.
Happy? So we'll stay with stated.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. 16, 13, 5.
Chair, reading what they have stated or claimed or said.
Okay.
On page 121.
One, two,
yeah, I think we need to be a little more specific there.
Right.
The SABC refutes Mr. Mabaso's claims, and I'm saying the move regarding that he had introduced the performance management system. The SABC refutes Mr. Mabaso's claims that he had introduced the performance management system. Full stop.
Right.
According to the SABC, he... and I'm suggesting we add only revised a policy, which was approved prior to his appointment in June 2013. So just two little amendments.
And that's an accurate description of
from
what they said.
Yeah, absolutely. It's from what they have said.
Okay. Okay. Yes. Thank you. Can we move on to 16... 14.1, editorial policy. Accurate reflection of what they said? Yes?
Yeah.
Thank you. Can we ask the minister's people if there's no space that Mr. McQuinnick gets preference, please? Is there a seat?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Welcome, sir. We have noted your apology. On page 18, 1615. We don't agree with the physical activity, did we?
No.
We haven't. Oh, I'm sorry.
We
did. We
did.
And everybody said they have.
Yeah.
Okay. We're happy with 1614.1, are we?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
1615.1. Happy?
Yes.
Is there anything else under heading public protector that members feel strongly we should put in that is reflected in their report? We don't have to put everything in, but is there anything that you feel would strengthen our report if we added it? Or are we uncomfortable at the 2 points? Thank you. Can we then move on to former SABC employees?
We've done that,
eh?
Yeah.
Oh, so we're done with this?
Yeah. It's the minister.
Oh,
right?
All right, no? So that's SABC done and dusted.
Yeah.
All right.
No, I know we dealt with it yesterday, and I think Honorable Singh has recommended that in 17.1.1, I think it was Honorable Swart, that we, instead of putting Ms. Led, we put lie in that comment. Did we change that, Chair?
Yeah.
Because to me it's significant. I'm now
what we agreed on yesterday, and that's why we said we'll give you a cleaned up report. What we agreed on yesterday, Mr. Molipe states that Dr. Gubane had lied and deliberately misled. That's what you asked us to add yesterday.
No, Chair, I suggested it, but I just want to make it very clear because some people indicated that I said that Dr. Gubane lied and deliberately misled. That is not, it wasn't me, it was a quote of Mr. Malefe. The consideration of the committee will be done at a later stage.
Yeah.
No, I did not say that. So let's just correct that for the record purposes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So once something
that
I think is crucial for us to thing that I raised yesterday, that because this becomes our report. You see, this incident that colleague Swart is raising, it's something that is going to become a problem when we deal with or when we present our report for anyone who reads it. I don't know how we are going to make sure that anybody who reads this document would immediately understand that this is actually not what the committee is saying, but this is the claims by the SABC. I don't know how we're going to put it in our document such that there will be that understanding, because it is actually my concern, and I think this feedback already speaks to that issue, that once we have this document circulated, and anyone who reads it without really seeing those, you will always have to explain. I don't know. Either we change the page, give it a different color, and explain it as to what it means, but we need to do something. Otherwise, just on a written, normal writing system, it actually is going to create a problem. I don't know how we're going to deal with this.
Can I take my course here and then talk here on this point? We can
no, Chair, the point, I think, I don't know what will confuse people, honestly, because we are taking the extract, we are merely summarizing what the ASABC said. And I was not just saying you said so, Honorable Swart. I was saying we must quote that. Because that's the terminology that Mr. Molefe used, the lie.
Yeah, that wasn't you.
Yeah. I'm not saying you said it.
No.
He lied. But it was Mr. Molefe that said it. Dr. Ngubane lied.
All
So I'm saying, Chair, in short, I'm saying the way we are going about it, it's okay. Because we need to have a summarized version of what SABC, how SABC responded. And again, we, as the committee, we also have an obligation to prove that we actually took all the submissions into account. And I don't see any other way of showing that we were very thorough in taking in processing the submissions that came before us. And this process fits into that.
We'll come back to you. All right,
Kubisa
and Nsing.
No, I was on the same point that we need to allay the fears of our colleague Ronald Mashango, because we are merely processing what SAPC gave us, and I don't think there will be any problem, because we do state that this is what they said. So I don't think we can find ourselves in any problem.
Honorable.
Yeah, Chair, maybe we just need to go back to how we captured that, because...
Hold on, you see?
It might be necessary where there are such verbatim statements made by certain individuals. We put them in quotes. So that clears it. Everybody knows what something in quotes is, that it's what that person said. So we can look at the report again and see how we can quote some of these as expressed verbatim by the member that we are quoting.
All right. Another alternative, and Cindy's really applying her mind. If we go to the last paragraph on our document of page 4, our document, of page 4, 12.4, she's suggesting we add to cover everybody. The committee has considered the responses in detail. Full stop. The salient point of each response is summarized in paragraphs 13.2.1 to 21. Those will be the paragraphs in our new document below. It should be noted that this section does not reflect the committee's views or offer an evaluation of the responses. So we put that right in front in our document.
But it's intended to be a summary of what's...
Yeah, but I'm saying we can put it in front of it now. And it will specify from point 12, 1 to point 61, which would cover what we've done now. Everybody sees the light.
Excellent, Chairperson.
Cindy.
Oh, but through you, Chair. Excellent, Cindy.
All right. That deals with SABC. Can we, Latapo, you will, it was you that dealt with the minister's input? Okay, as it again, members should go to Latapo's document.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes, sir.
I'm really sorry, but I'm just a bit concerned about SABC's our capturing the SABC's response to the public protector's report.
I have to go back there. Let's go back.
I just want us to...
Hold on.
At
16.15.1.
It's... Page? 18. We need to... just insert a sentence to the, because we're not dealing with their whole attitude to the public protector's report. We are here, we're not reflecting. And I would just suggest we insert a sentence to indicate that in their view, there was uncertainty to the binding nature of the public protector's remedial action. That's a critical part of the SABC's version. And that is contained on 128 of their report.
Members are part of that?
Yeah. I would just like that as a matter of principle. That is very important for the SABC's version, that at that stage there was uncertainty.
Just give us
128.
128?
At the top, where there's a quote, paragraph 10.1.2, it's that paragraph, and there's a quote from the court case, and it says there was uncertainty. It is true that up to the time that the Constitutional Court pronounced on the status, there was uncertainty on the binding nature of the public protector's remedial action.
And you suggest we put that in where?
We need to put that in as a starting paragraph.
So a new 16.15.1.
The SABC states, yeah, and that will be states that in their view it is true, and you just put that sentence there, that up to the time that the Constitutional Court pronounced on the status, there was uncertainty on the binding nature of the public protective remedial action. That explains all the subsequent decisions. I'm not saying, I'm saying that is their version. You got that, Cindy?
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's go back to our document on the shareholder. I think our document spoke about shareholder something or the other.
Yeah, but that was not the
that
section.
Okay.
Seven.
Hey, seven.
Yes.
Our document. Okay. Yes. Our document, page 7, that's section 15, that's our document. I'm sure, Mpho, you're going to read from your document. Not Mpho, Letapo.
Yeah.
You'll read from your document.
Yeah.
So we need our document, page 7. We need Letapo's document that says, that says research. Enough of that.
They say ministers.
And then, of, not the SAP, you see the ministers.
I think it's on page 17, Minister of Communication. Is that where it starts? Yeah. Page 17 of the research document.
Yeah. All right. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. The Minister's submission addresses Part D of the draft report, and it identifies five areas in which the Minister is implicated. The first area that she addresses is the memorandum of incorporation of the SABC, which was irregularly amended to empower the minister to remove board directors in line with the Companies Act. The second issue she addresses is amendments which have been proposed to the Broadcasting Act to concentrate power in the ministry. The third question is the minister's involvement in the removal of non-executive board members. The fourth one is the minister unduly pressurizing certain board members to resign. And the last one is the minister's possible covert or overt pressurizing the board to appoint Mr. Motsoeneng as chief operations officer. I first address the amendment of the MOI. In the minister's submission, she contends that it is factually incorrect that she irregularly amended the SABC's MOI to concentrate power within the ministry. The minister further states that when she was appointed on 24 May 2014, the SABC MOI had already provided for the non-executive directors to be removed using Section 71, subsection 3 of the Companies Act number 71 of 2008. The relevant clause in the MOI is 14.4. The submission further states that the draft report was incorrect in stating that the MOI moved powers of the board to the minister. The minister also reaffirms a point made in her testimony, particularly to the validity of removing board members using Section 71, subsection 3 of the Companies Act, and she further states that she had sought independent legal advice and that a decision was put forward to the Portfolio Committee on Communication. The minister also questions the credibility of Mr. Masinga as a witness, particularly with regards to why Mr. Masinga had decided to contest the MOI. She cites case S.M. Masinga versus the Minister of Communications and three other respondents under case number 10721/2015. With regards to amendments to the Broadcasting Act, the submission notes that the whole of paragraph 4.2 of the draft report, which deals with the bill and findings on paragraph 12.1.3 and 13.1.2 are irrelevant to the issues investigated by the committee. The minister states that the committee failed to acknowledge that the bill was certified to be constitutionally compliant by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor and Independent Counsel. The bill was approved by Cabinet and representation was made to the Portfolio Committee on Communication. The Minister contends that the claim that the Broadcasting Amendment Bill was an attempt to centralize power is without merit. She further cautions against Parliament's interpreting law and urges that the doctrine of separation of powers must be maintained. The submission stresses that Section 5 of the Companies Act of 2008 mentions legislation that takes precedence over the Companies Act, and the Broadcasting Act number 499 is not mentioned. With regards to the removal of the non-executive board members, the minister submits that the board acted without undue influence from her in the removal of former non-executive board members, Mr. Lubisi, Ms. Zinde, and Ms. Kalidas from their positions. The board was empowered by Section 71, Subsection 3 of the Companies Act to remove the board members. The submission further states that at no point did the minister pressure any board member to resign. With regards to pressurizing the board to appoint Mr. Motsoeneng, the minister stated in a submission that she was invited to attend a board meeting scheduled for the 7th July 2014, where the matter for appointing Mr. Motsoeneng as the permanent CEO would be discussed. The minister states that the board has no power to appoint or suggest appointment of executive members as outlined in the Broadcasting Act. She states that she declined attending the meeting, but eventually attended until deliberations were concluded. She then suggested that she receive a written recommendation from the board suggesting the appointment of Mr. Motsoeneng as permanent CEO. The decision she took was after consultation with Mkhunu attorneys who mandated to provide a report on the public protector's report, which had findings against Mr. Motsoeneng. The submission further contends that the minister was not part of the deliberations, but rather the decision to appoint Mr. Motsoeneng was after considerable weighing of the facts presented to her. With regards to the alleged breaches of law, the minister raises the issue of process and natural justice with reference to the committee's findings that she acted in conflict with various statutes. She states the section in the report which sets out the alleged breaches is vague, and the minister notes that she was not afforded proper notice of the allegations against her in order for her to assess which conduct implicates the legal obligations and the two are in breach. The minister further submits that she does not waiver her right to be properly informed of the allegations against her and be afforded meaningful time to engage them. With regards to the multi-choice deal, the minister notes that Caxton, who are one of the complainants in the Competition Commission matter between SABC and multi-choice, have brought back the case to the Competition Appeal Court on grounds that not all documents pertaining to the deal were made available as per the order by the ACBC and multi-choice. The matter was heard in December 2016 and a decision is being awaited. The minister therefore contends that the matter should be regarded as sub judice. With regards to the breach of the Constitutional Act 108 of 1996, paragraph 13.2.3 of the draft report states that in instances where the minister presumably played a role in the removal of the non-executive director, the minister may have contravened section 96, subsection B and C of the Constitution, section 15, subsection 1 of the Broadcasting Act, and section 2.1, subsection B and D of the Executive Code of Ethics, and Section 17E of the Privileges, Powers and Privileges Act. In her submission, the minister states that the section referred to in Section 92, subsection 2, B and C, and not Section 96, B and C as quoted. The minister contends that the use of language such as suggests that the committee is not certain about its findings, and that the word may suggest possibility and not guilty of any wrongdoing. The minister states that there is no evidence that she exposed herself to any situation involving the risk of conflict between her official responsibilities and private interests. Therefore, she contends that the finding by the committee was factually incorrect.
Thank you, sir.
All right. That was an attempt at summarization by, thank you, sir, by the top of the minister's input. Somebody asking questions?
Chairperson, when I read, thank you, Mr. Tapo, when I read what you and the drafters have put in your summary and what he has read to also included here. There's much of a muchness. And I would tend to say that what is included in the research unit, the observations there, should be in our document.
Verbatim.
And most of it is. I think there'll be very little room to maneuver. But one needs just to check, because the research unit summary is quite an accurate representation of what the minister's submissions were, which we need to capture. So just in opening, I would think that we take that and put it into our summary.
And remove what we've got in our summary currently.
There's not much that you might have to remove there, because I see, Cindy, that what you've got in this document, our document, is largely based on what the research has said.
But you prefer we take it in that fashion?
In that fashion.
Fine. So, because I think we've got soft copies. What Mr. Singh is suggesting, we'll come to you on the board. What Mr. Singh is suggesting is that we literally cut and paste, take that document and replace what we've got in our document. That's Mr. Singh's suggestion, and I want... we don't have a problem with that. Can you do it? I could say it. Cindy's saying she did exactly that.
Oh, yeah.
She's saying she's done exactly that, and all she did was the what do you call it, the numbering and the... Aerial and whatever you call those type of things.
Okay.
Can we quickly confirm then, Mr. Singh and others, that what the researchers said is in fact what we put in our document? Because if we have to cut and paste again, it means you must go and renumber and re-whatever the case might be. But the suggestion of Mr. Singh is that that's a better version. Let's take yours, ma'am, and then we'll take Lord Lewin.
Thank you.
Don't worry,
ladies
first.
Jefferson, I'm quite satisfied with what we have in our document. I think I actually prefer the layout. I'm sorry, no offense, please, to the research, but thanks for that work. But the layout in our document, and it speaks to the essence and the different issues that the minister is responding to, and I think we must run with it as it is in our document.
Chair, I think what we want is whether there's no change
in
the content, and there's no change in the content, so we can stay with what is in the text.
Honourable Waters?
Chair, I've just got a few points I'd like to raise, if that's okay.
Before we go there, are we clean with work on our document?
Yeah, that's fine.
Is this thing you can live with that?
Yeah, sure, because if Cindy says it's a similar, based on the research, then I'm happy with it.
All right. Okay, fine. So we're going to go back then to our document from page 7.
All right.
Okay, we will first argue which one do we use. So can we go to point, and members will add and subtract as we go along. On page 7, 15... Which is the summary. Is there anything members want to take?
No, that's
the, or the introduction, or whatever you call it. Are we happy with that?
Yeah.
Yes. Amendment to MOI 1511. Any changes? Honourable Waters?
Chair, thank you. Just an inclusion. If you go to the minister's submission, section, paragraph 9.
Submission? Yes?
Paragraph 9.
Paragraph 9.
The minister does state that a copy of the MOI was registered with the CIPC on the 14th of May 2014 and is attached. And I think, it's important that we have the date of that MOI that was submitted, that the minister claims was submitted to the CIPO in here. It indicated the minister was well aware of the procedures needed to register MOI. And I think it's, and she states it here, I'm not putting words in her mouth.
Okay.
So I think we need to put that 14th of May 2014.
You want us to put that into somewhere into 1511?
Yes, please.
Can you do that?
Okay.
We'll really do that. All right, members are together. So on her paragraph 9 on page 3, Honourable Waters is suggesting that we put in the first sentence that ends 14th May 2014 is attached.
We don't have to put it attached in, but...
But I'm saying...
Yeah.
Is that okay, members? Are we together? Minister's response on page 3. She says a copy of a memorandum of incorporation as it was registered with the Companies and Intellectual Properties Commission on the 14th of May 2014. Mr. Waters is suggesting we put that in somewhere in 15.1.1 because it's taken directly from her submission. Lolive.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think we can include that, especially that we've already indicated the appointment date. This is in the same clause.
Okay. So, thank you. Anything else on 15.1.1? No. 15.1.2. Ours is an accurate reflection. That's the question we're answering.
Yeah.
We're happy with our reflection. 15.1.3? Yes. 15.1.4. Happiness? Thank you. Yes. 15.1.4? You want to say something, Chairman?
On 15.1.4.
This is Chairman. Hey, right in front of your paper.
on 15.1, Chair, the date of the appointment, she was appointed on the 25th, not the 24th.
15.1.1?
Yeah.
Where did you get that from?
From a part of a document. It's in a document, Chair.
Oh, I was appointed on the 25th of May, on point 8.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you got that from me? All right. Happiness? Honourable
yes.
Members?
Yes.
We're changing 24 to the 25th.
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. Where were we? 15.1.3. Comfortable? Yes? Yeah. Point 15.1.4. Are we going too fast?
No.
It's really what the TAPO briefed us on. Excuse me, please. 15.2.1 that talks to the broadcast, amendments to the Broadcasting Act. Are we happy that we are portraying the minister's input accurately?
Yeah.
Yes. Fifteen three, the removal of board members. 15.3.1. I'm going to see what minister said in their report. Yes, Mr. Waters.
Just a few changes, Chair.
15.3.1.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
The last sentence is the board has acted in line with section 71(2) of the Companies Act, which empowered it to remove it. Empowered her.
Mm-hmm.
We're referring to the minister. Empowered the minister.
The board.
The board has acted. Oh, okay, sorry. Right, there we go. Thank you.
Happiness?
Yeah, happiness.
All right, anything else on 15.3.1? No. 15.3.2. One liner, we're happy with that.
No.
Yes, sir? Yes, ma'am? Yes, everybody?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Well, Chair, I'm just trying to think whether the
15.3.2,
yes, the removal of the yes, the removal of the non-executive board members. The minister goes on to say that that matter was presented to the portfolio committee. Meaning it was presented to a body of parliament.
just refer to the page if you have the page.
Yes.
The minister's page.
Yes. The minister's page is page 8. I think you can look at page 9. No. Page 4, sorry.
Minister's page.
11, yes.
Minister's page 4.
Section 11.
Yes?
Yes. Page 4, the subsection 11.
Yes.
At the end of the paragraph. I reported on this issue to the PC on communication. And they resolved to close the matter. Now, I think it's important that we don't drop that matter, because I think it's, you know, there has been an issue that these things actually have come to pass. And so I think it's crucial that we just put that one in as part of what the minister said.
We're going to put it underway, under the removal. On our 15.12, is Cindy suggesting we do that. Cindy is saying it's already in 15.12. On page 8. If you look at page 8 of our D, it says there, and the matter had been put to the portfolio committee too.
Okay.
So we've covered it in page 8 of our document. Right on top.
Yeah.
All right? Okay.
For the committee on communications, we can put if you want to be specific.
We can say portfolio committee on communications. Oh, we've referred it on top then. Okay.
Okay.
All right, you happy, Honourable?
Yes.
Where were we now?
13?
15.41. Okay. Sorry about that, Honourable Member. 15.41, yes, sir. Waters?
Two things with this paragraph. If you look at line 5.
Line 5 of our document?
Yeah. It's been captured incorrectly. It stated that meaning the minister, initially declined the invitation but eventually attended the meeting until deliberations were concluded. Now, the minister states in paragraph... Well, it's 25.3 and 25.4.
On her document?
Yeah.
25.3 and 25.4.
Page 28. Page 8. Thank you. I declined to attend the board meeting.
Let's get to page 8. Members are there? Yep.
Right. She states, I declined to attend the board meeting itself, but waited at the SABC's premises until it was completed. This was verified, actually, by one of the board members. Remember, he said she came in after 11 o'clock. After about 2 hours, the chairperson informed me that the board had taken the decision and wanted to relate to me. Then she joined the meeting. Okay, after the board had resolved to appoint Mr. Montenegro. So I would like to suggest changes here. So she had initially declined the invitation and eventually attended the meeting once the deliberations were concluded. I think that is fair.
Eventually attended the meeting?
Once the
deliberations. So
yeah.
We take out until and we say once.
Yes.
Okay.
And change but to end.
Eh?
You with me? Okay.
Are we together?
No.
You're not?
Okay.
All right. Let's go to page 14.12.
Okay. If I can, as it stands now, the impression given in that sentence, Chair, if I may,
yes,
is that the minister joined the meeting during deliberation of the appointment of the COO, which he didn't, according to her evidence. So that sentence, the fifth line, starts as she. Are you with me? Yeah, she had initially declined the invitation, but eventually attended the meeting until the deliberations were concluded. That's wrong. If you look at her evidence. So I'm suggesting...
Just before you carry on, remember the following. If you then go to what Honourable Waters is talking about on 25.3, he's saying we probably never captured it as accurately as we could.
But
I think...
No.
Let's go to
the other one. Chair, I think it's almost the same thing, because in her, in 25.4, I joined the meeting at that point and was told the board had resolved what I was. So here, it's implying that though at the beginning of the meeting she was not there, because she had declined, as she was saying in 25 straight. Ultimately, she joined the meeting.
Yeah.
Now we'll come back to you. We'll just get other views and then you can defend your position. Any other views?
No, I share the same views of my colleague, that on 25.3, she declined. That's what she's saying.
Mm.
And then on 25.4, I then joined the meeting.
Yep.
And I think this just summarizes the event.
No.
Okay.
We'll discuss it until we reach consensus. Honorable.
Killian? I think we should be reading what we have summarized very carefully, because if we say she initially declined the invitation, then it means something different. We should rather say...
No, read it together with what she wrote on page 25.
I know.
Okay.
I declined to attend the board meeting itself. That's what she said. But waited at the SABC's premises until it was completed.
Right.
In other words, she didn't want to participate in the activities of the board itself, but she was willing to be there and waited, obviously, you know, and that was the whole arrangement. And remember, we had evidence to that effect as well. So I do have sympathy for the argument that we should look at declined the invitation.
Mm-hmm.
But because it is a question of she did not participate in the meeting, but proceeded after, joined the board members after the decision was taken.
Mm-hmm.
That would be more accurate.
Yeah. Can I come in, Chair?
No, I recognize... and then so you come back to your point.
Okay.
You're not sure. I also think that if we say she had initially declined the invitation, might suggest that then at some stage she agreed to the invitation. It's very ambiguous. And therefore, I think maybe we can say the minister, according to the minister, she declined the invitation and only attended after the board deliberations were concluded.
Yeah.
And that way we cover the essence of what...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it captures that. Because if you say she initially declined the invitation, it's like she declined the invitation and later possibly accepted the invitation.
Mm-hmm.
But if we are capturing that way, we leave out initially declined, we are capturing exactly what she is saying in 25.4.
Now, Chair, I'm covered. I just think, you know, just to react to the previous member's comments, the fact is if we leave until deliberations were concluded in the reports like that, it means that she joined the meeting sometime during deliberations of the CEO,
yeah,
and she sat there while they were debating it until deliberations were concluded, which is not right. We're not capturing it right. She only attended the meeting once deliberations were concluded, and then she was informed of their decision. So as long as we capture that, I'm very happy.
Otherwise, we could just put it in the two paragraphs.
So what did you want to
do? You know, we're helping each other. I'm just thinking aloud and Cindy before you do anything, but I hear what you're saying. If we, the contentious issue here is the sentence that starts that she declined up to probably proposing the appointment of Mr. Mutsune. Those are probably the contentious issues. If you took all those things out and just supplanted what she's got in 25.3 and 25.4, would that help us? Because then it's a direct from her.
Yeah.
Then there's no dispute or fight at all.
Yeah.
You with us? So what we will do from the sentence that she had initially up to Mr. Maturning's appointment, we're going to take off our report and we'll supplant it with 25.3 and 25.4. Correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything else on 15? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Chair. One additional point. If you look at paragraph 25.7 of the minister's submission.
Honourable members, yeah.
25.7 of the minister's submission, where she talks about, I also considered the fact that the position of CEO had not been externally advertised, and that the board's motivation for not having advertised the position, and she carries on, and I was satisfied with the explanation. That needs to be included here in paragraph, or maybe it's a second paragraph, 15.4.2, but I do think it's important that the minister highlighted in her submission that she felt satisfied that she did not have to insist on the position being externally advertised.
Comments, honourable members?
The whole paragraph.
We just want to understand why we put that sentence in. What you're saying is everything else is fine. You're suggesting we add a paragraph.
25.7.
And not delete anything we've got here.
No, not delete anything. No.
All right, honourable members, 25.7 is being suggested that we add to verbatim to 15.41.
Or 15.42.
Or we could make it 15.42. Is that the suggestion?
Yeah.
Can we add that to the body of our report? Honourable Dolive.
Chair, I just want to check, having that paragraph alone, is it going to assist us when we make further deliberations? Because to me, that paragraph flows from 25C, where there was given a copy of the interview. Then she considered. Because to me, I have a sense that there may be a link between the two paragraphs. Then if you put the last paragraph on its own, it's not going to make sense that much, because it is a follow-up to what you captured in 25C.
So
what is the proposal that you're making then?
No, I'm saying, Chair, if we really want 5.7, we cannot delete it to what is captured in 5.6. I'm sorry, in 25.6.
Yes.
Even if we don't take both paragraphs as they are, but contextualize what is captured there, because it's a flow.
There's a suggestion, honorable member? Otherwise, we run the risk of really just cutting and pasting everything with the minister's report.
Yeah.
That's just the fear that I'm with. But let's take water.
Chairman, we don't want to cut and paste everything, obviously, else that we could just submit the whole document. But the fact is, it's material. It's highly, it's extremely important that the fact that the minister thought there was no need to advertise that post. It's extremely important. And the minister, her whole paragraph on that point, so she herself understands the importance of it, and I think we need to put it in the summary. And how we do that, if we want to incorporate paragraph 25.6 as well, in order to make it logical, that's fine with me. But I really do, the principle of the fact that the position wasn't advertised should be summarised.
Yeah,
definitely. We look into your wisdom so that you don't fight when we bring it back to you after lunch, so we capture it. The easier way for me and Cindy to do it is just to take 25.6 and 25.7, and you can't fight with us.
Yeah.
No, we won't fight with you.
Included.
We won't fight with you.
All right. So,
the
So we'll add that to the tail end of 15.4.1.
You can make a 15.4.2, Chief. That's what I'm saying. It's a long paragraph. Only long paragraph.
All right. Anything else on 15.4.1? Thank you very much, Honourable. 15.4.1. Anything else? No. 15.5.1. Have we captured accurately the minister's responses? 15.5.1.
Yeah.
Happiness.
Yeah.
Yes. Have we captured 15.6.1 accurately?
Yeah.
Honourable Waters.
Yeah. Chair, we have captured accurately, and the Minister correctly points out that in our report, the main body of the report, we've captured those two sections of the Constitution incorrectly. So just to note that we have to go back and rectify that.
We
just make a note.
Yeah, make a note, yeah.
Yeah.
Just.
No, by the time it comes back after lunch, chances are we have fixed it up in the body of the report.
Yeah.
We will leave that as it is and just fix up our one. Anything else on 15.6.1? 15.6.2. No. 15.7.1. Honourable Killian.
I'm covered.
15.7.2. Okay. All right. 15.7.3.
Yes.
16.1.1. Oh, we've done that. Oh, that was the SABC. So that deals with the minister's input. Is there any input from ministers? Response that we think is crucial that we have left out. Once again, if Honorable Schwartz here is going to say it doesn't mean that if it's not captured in this report, we can't deal with it going forward because we've considered the entire document. But is there anything that members feel strongly that we should put in? If not, we will take that as a fair reflection having considered the minister's input. Correct? I love you all. That then deals with all the inputs except the MOI. MOI is just for sharpening ourselves. We'll get to the next phase, which would be considering our observations and recommendations. And I got a note from Mabasutu, are you around? Yeah. I got a note that Vanara was so busy, you better tell Vanara that he's got about 15 minutes because we're going to need it. I don't think we're going to take more than 15 minutes on the MRI.
Okay. Can we have a comfort
break? Oh, no, it's fine. Okay, it's fine. Can we have a comfort break, then we come back to do...
more time as well.
Yeah.
Comfort break, do MRI, and then we do Vanara's issue. Can we be back at 11:45? Because it'll give us an hour... to deal with two issues, which are really just inputs. Is that okay, Honourable Member?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back at 11:45, deal with the MOI, the TAPO. You'll just give us a briefing on MOI, and then Advocate Vanara will give us a briefing on content, not content, contradictory.
I want to tell you another one. I think I can go down a little bit.
Excuse me.
because Vanara's one has a direct impact on no, but it doesn't. It's more for observations as well, isn't it? Yeah. All right, so it doesn't matter which one we start with first, because we're not impacting on direct input. Let's stick with what we've agreed on. My proposal, honourable members, is that we will allow the experts to just give us a briefing. We will take a few minutes of clarity if there are, or questions of clarity if there are, because that then informs how we go forward in terms of observations, and we will do it the same with Vanara. So this is not as a direct result of inputs that we want to affect the inputs of the participants. So let's make that very clear. This really is just to sharpen the committee so that when we come back after lunch, we have another version of two very important matters that are undoubtedly going to appear in our observations and in our recommendations possibly, and that is mostly the MOI and areas where there might be contradictions of inputs from members. So let's make that very clear from the beginning, that these are not findings, these are not observations, and these are not recommendations of the ad hoc committee at this point. It's purely an empowerment tool for members. Exactly?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well. Can we, I'm not sure how long the two of you are going to take, but we've literally got until about 1 o'clock, quarter to one. Can we allow everybody, all in all, half an hour? In other words, your input plus our questions of clarity, if there are any, for half an hour. Your input, Vanara, plus questions of clarity for half an hour. That will be probably take us to about quarter to one. Allow us to break for lunch, go to the budget, and reconvene in M46, half an hour after the budget speech is over. So it'll give members half an hour to go and grab their documents, to go and refresh, and we then get stuck into recommendations because we seem to be on track for recommendations this afternoon. During quarter to one, and I'm sorry, Cindy, that we're taking your lunch together with the experts, from quarter to one until half an hour, from quarter to one until we reconvene, we're assuming that you will clean up the report, the team, just to incorporate the various aspects that members have suggested. We'll spend 15 minutes, honorable members, because you'll only be having sight of it then. We might ask members that have added changes just to highlight those changes so that we agree that those changes are accurate. After that, everything reverts to us, because then recommendations and observations belong to us, not to researchers, not to advisors, not to company secretaries. From that point, it becomes our fight. As long as we're happy with the source documents from which we will have our fights and our conversations. So Ken, you want to say something, sir?
I was going to propose, Chair, maybe what we should do, meaning that after the budget, we'll be zooming into recommendations. And I was going to propose that, because we do already have a copy of recommendations that we started to work on. And I know for a fact that the Honorable Kellyan has already started to put flesh into some of the recommendations. For us to be able to proceed smooth and easy, I was going to ask if possible that she can make her work available to all members, so that members can then themselves, in fact, in like what we are emphasizing, Chair, you'll recall that we're saying we must package recommendations in line of short-term and the long-term recommendations. What is needed for the interim board when it moves in, and what is going to be the long-term recommendation. So I say that because already I've just looked at the, some of the work that she has done, but if possible, I spoke to Honorable Swart yesterday and Prof. But let's share that information, even the work that if colleagues on the other side have already started to do some work. Let's share so that by the time we go to the committee dealing with the recommendation, we sort of have a common understanding, all of us, of the kind of, you know, input that we want to make, already, which is already enriched by the work that has already been started. So I was proposing that if we agree in that line, we can make available those copies to all of us, meaning that Kellyanne can then make available those copies to all of us. We can then apply our mind as we prepare to go to the big fight, because that's where all of us have to be in one when we move to that space. So that's a proposal I'm making, Chair, but I thought it was important that the committee sort of, you know, agree with that particular position. And if that's so, then it's going to be. Thank you.
Any other proposals? Cindy, and I'll give you Cindy's proposal as well, so that we sort of get to it. But what I'm hearing is you're saying that there's some work being done on this side. I'm sure there's lots of work being done on this side, and lots of work being done on that side, whichever the side is. The question is, how do we make it smooth? Let me also give you Cindy's one, so that when you talk to them very briefly, honorable members, otherwise you're not going to have time. Cindy is suggesting, because I'm assuming she'll work on, have you got a working document now? So Cindy, over above what you're saying,
Cindy saying, you recall we had some skeleton of recommendations previously.
Yeah.
She's suggesting that, why is it, is it not more advisable that that becomes the base document of some sort, and then at the meeting we as participants contribute to it?
Yeah.
Would that be fine, Honorable Chauke, and then Honorable Kellyanne?
Yeah.
And then let's move on to that. Chauke?
I think that's the point, Chair. The fact that Honorable Kellyanne has started to put flesh into that skeleton that we have. So I'm saying that let's use that skeleton too, as the flesh that is put among ourselves, and any other colleague who has already started to look at and put anything, let's share it together, so that by the time we get to the level of dealing with recommendations, we already have an understanding of the approach in which each one of us will be. But the skeleton is there. Cindy has already put flesh into that skeleton. This is exactly what the what's called Cindy saying.
Honorable Kellyanne, and then Prof.
Chairperson, yes. Just to allay any fears, I did not change any of the previous recommendations because I know that there would be suspicion from the opposition. The only thing that I tried to do was just to rearrange it. In some cases, for instance, we had a heading portfolio committee and then we had a different heading portfolio, parliamentary oversight. So what I basically did was I just collated the sub-paragraphs, put them together. There were two amendments, but I've marked them very clearly.
New information. We don't
But it's just the format. It's just the format.
The format.
And in fact, I can show them exactly what number of the original document it is.
All right. Let's take Prof and then take
Now, Chair, on a lighter note, we're getting the word suspicion for the first time.
Something
for the very first time. But that is on a lighter note. I think Honorable Chauke is proposing also the format over and above that we have. And I wonder at what time we'll put it in that format of short-term, medium-term, and long-term. That these are the recommendations. These are the short-term recommendations, medium-term, and long-term. I think he's also coming with that vision. I think we must keep it in mind as well.
Honorable Mkwena?
No, Chair, I was going to suggest, because I think there's nothing wrong with people sharing information. There's nothing wrong with that. But the basis of what we're working on is what's in this country. But I think we must share each other's work.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it. Thanks.
Yeah. Honorable Waters?
I'm covered, Chair.
You're covered.
My point was, we use the official document as the basis. If people want to recommend things be moved around or added to, whatever the case may be, then we do that as we go along.
All right. So
Happiness?
Taking
on from you.
Amen to that. All right. So yes, I think what members are saying, this will be the starting point. In other words, that other where we started, but we don't want to get officially involved in how you share your information because it just gives us too much work. Give it to each other over lunch, give it to each other over tea, but when we get in there, you will argue your points on this basis and we can rearrange later. That I think is what everybody is saying. And that is going to start half an hour after the budget vote is concluded. Over to Letapo and Mbo. And members will take notes if there's any clarity. You're going to talk to us on the MOI as you understand it. Do you want to do it overhead? No, it's fine.
Don't do it underhand.
Members will take notes? Oh, sorry.
Cindy's indicating that there is a document prepared. I think it's this one. This one, eh? To be read together with this one. Which both have. All right. So it's these two documents. It's this one with the design and one that is called Analysis of Memorandum of Incorporation, Research Unit. Both of them. Members got both of them?
Yeah.
They were emailed. Do we have extra copies? Which is the second one that you don't have, sir?
That one. Yeah, we have that.
From the chair.
We emailed them yesterday. Are there additional copies? Oh, did you have copies this morning? I think that's
better.
Chair, just on a separate thing, I don't have this one contradictory evidence.
That's Vanara's one.
Yes, can I have that one as well? Because I don't have that.
Do we have that one? Vanara's one.
Okay, I'll get this one.
You've got it. All right. There seems to be a shortage of these documents. Mabasutu, can you organize? How many people need copies? How many people can people indicate who doesn't have this document? You got another one. So, okay, has everybody got this document?
No, that's not my own.
There's an additional one. All right. Happiness. Thank you. I don't know who's going to start first. And you can just indicate which document you're talking to. Maybe this will take notes, yeah, and you can ask questions of clarity if you so wish later on. It is 12 o'clock. Please, by about 4:15 or so, if you could be done, and then you can ask for questions of clarity if at all possible.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'll be looking at the presentations titled submissions received on the SABC Memorandum of Incorporation and changes identified in the copy submitted to the ad hoc committee. The committee is in possession of three copies of the MOI. The first copy is undated and unsigned, which is also part of the documents the SABC submitted as part of their submission. The second copy is the MOI adopted 20 September 2013 and signed by the Minister of Communications on 30 October 2014. The third copy is similar, which is adopted on the 20th of September 2013 and signed by the Minister on the 30th October 2014 and also signed by Professor Magube.
You'll ask questions of clarity later. Have you got a document? Yes. I'm going to take notes. You protected, sir.
So in the analysis document, I provide a table looking at the three MOIs and where there are changes or where there are changes or omissions, I highlight in red. So in the first...
We don't have red. Black
all white. Of them are black and white.
Yeah, yeah. The last time you looked at this document, it was in color. But subsequently, it was transformed black and white.
Which is red?
All right. And Chair, which minister? Just so that we know. Was it the current minister or the previous minister? Karim or
the previous?
So both the both copies of the MOI that was signed on the 30th of October 2014 were signed by Minister Mutambi. So the first change identified is in the definition, the definition of annual general meeting. In the two copies that were signed by the minister and Prof. Maguve, the changes that were identified is notwithstanding that the corporation is a private company and accordingly not required in terms of the Companies Act to hold an annual general meeting as defined in the Companies Act, duly called and constituted in terms of Section 61, subsection 7 of the Companies Act. And then the second change that was identified is section 13.3, where it speaks to the chairperson and deputy chairperson of the board. The unsigned or an undated MOI does not include clause 13.3.3, and then the other two copies that were signed by Prof. Maguve and Minister Mutambi include clause 13.3.3, which states that the board may designate any other non-executive director to act as chairperson if both the chairperson and deputy chairperson are absent or unable to perform their functions. The third item is the section on delegation and an assignment, which is section 13.4. There is alteration in the numbering. In the unsigned and undated copy, it's clause 13.8.1, which states that the powers to appoint and discipline staff members of the management team are delegated to the GCO, CFO, and COO, and can only be revoked by the minister. Whereas in the two copies that were signed, it's referred to as clause 13.4.8, which states that the powers to appoint, so it's basically the same, but it's just the numbering that was altered. And then with section 14.2, which speaks to cessation of office of directorship, clause 14.2.7, the undated and unsigned copy does not have that clause, and the two signed copies of the MOI include clause 14.2.7, which states that a director shall cease to hold office if he or she knowing is interested in any contract or proposed contract with the corporation and fails to declare his or her interest and its nature in the manner required by the Companies Act. And then the following section is 14.3, removal of a director in terms of section 71, subsection 3 of the Companies Act. In the undated and unsigned copy, it does not include the provision that states that the minister may remove a director appointed by him or her at any time as contemplated in section 59, subsection 8I of the Companies Act. And then the signed copy includes the provision that says that the minister may remove a director appointed by him or her at any time as contemplated in section 69, subsection 8I of the Companies Act. And then also the clause 14.4.1.2.6 in the unsigned and undated document, which states that a member is removed by the appointing authority in terms of section 15, subsection 1A, and section 15A, subsection 1A of the Broadcasting Act, or by order of the court in terms of section 71, subsection 506. And then in the signed copies, it's numbered as clause 14.5.4.1.5, and it removes the section where it speaks to the removal of a board member using the Broadcasting Act. And in the next slide, submissions that were made by the Minister of Communications and the SABC on the MOI. In the Minister's submission, the Minister contends that it is factually incorrect that she irregularly amended the SABC's MOI to concentrate power within the Ministry. She also states that when she was appointed on 25th May, the SABC MOI already provided for non-executive directors to be removed using Section 71, Subsection 3 of the Companies Act. The relevant clause in the MOI is 14.4, The submission further states that the draft report was incorrect in stating that the MOI moved powers of the board to the minister. The minister also reaffirms points made in her testimony, particularly to the validity of removing board members using Section 71, Subsection 3 of the Companies Act, and further states that she had sought independent legal advice and that the decision was put to the Portfolio Committee on Communication. Mbo later will touch on the proceedings of the meeting of the Portfolio Committee where the minister presented the MOI in June 2015. The minister also then questions the credibility of Mr. Masinga as a witness, particularly with regard to why Mr. Masinga had decided to contest the MOI. And then according to the SABC, it is incumbent upon the shareholder to include the unalterable clause contained in the Companies Act in order for the MOI to be accepted or registered by CIPC. The SABC refused the statement that the MOI was used to trump the Broadcasting Act as invalid. Further, in submissions made by the SABC, they provide evidence in Annexure AC26, which includes minutes of a special meeting of the board. The minutes are dated 29 June 2016, where requested changes to the MOI were tabled by Ms. Heldenhays. The board resolved that the recommended changes and the revised MOI is approved by submission to the shareholder for filing with the Companies and Intellectual Properties Commission. It is not clear whether this version of the MOI was ever submitted to the CPIC. The SABC also refutes that there is a MOI dated 20 September 13, but in the copies that were submitted by the minister, one of the copies that she signed on the 30th of October 2014. So that's
2014.
So the resolution for the changing of the MOI was on 20 September 2013, and then the minister signed it in October 30, 2014. SABC then further submits that the board was party to amendments of the MOI as per attached minutes of the AGM of 4 September 2015 and the board meetings of June 29, 2016 and 18 August 2016. And then other submissions too relating to the MOI in the next slide. Mr. Masinga gave evidence to the committee on 12 December 2016. He stated how he challenged attempts by Mr. Mtsweneng and Mr. Hines to suspend him on the basis that only the board had the competency to suspend or discipline him in terms of the MOI. Mr. Masinga testified that he reported the matter to the board members. The board members were up in arms since the board had not taken a resolution authorizing his suspension. His submission further states subsequently that Mr. Mutambi amended the MOI in 2014. The amended MOI took away powers of the board to appoint, discipline and fire group executives and gave these powers to the executive directors. It is the amended MOI which enabled executive directors to purge those deemed who opposed to the wrongs they were doing and replace them with compliant individuals. In the next slide, Mr. Masinga further provides evidence which contradicts evidence by the current minister, Ms. Faith Mutambi. In her testimony, the minister states that, and this is clause 8.1.2 of the draft report, during her evidence, the minister insisted that amendments to the MOI were effected in accordance with both the Broadcasting Act and the Companies Act. She stated that although legislation did not require her to do so, the ministry had consulted the board on the amendments as a courtesy before they were submitted to Companies and Intellectual Property Registration Office. She had also briefed the Portfolio Committee on the MOI in June 2015. According to the minister, neither the board nor the Portfolio Committee had raised any reservations about the impact of the amendments or the manner in which they were processed. Mr. Masinga subsequently submitted minutes, board meeting minutes dated 29 January, which state on the contrary. The minutes indicate that board members did raise their dissatisfaction with the amendments to the MOI and that the board had taken a resolution to the effect that the minister would be invited to discuss concerns about the matter. And the resolution number of that meeting is 29/01/15 B567, which resolved that the Honourable Minister must be invited to a board meeting to discuss the members' concerns regarding the amendments to the Memorandum of Incorporation. We then checked with CPIC to see to check which MOI was lodged with the CPIC. The information gathered from CIPC state that the only MOI that was submitted to them was submitted on 14 October 2013. The signed MOI was signed by former Minister of Communications, Mr. Karim, and the notice of amendment of the MOI was submitted on behalf of Mr. Karim by his attorney. The only record of recent changes at CIPC, which was submitted by the SABC on behalf of the SABC, are dated 15/7/2015, which is the notice of change of directors. So, issues for the committee to consider is if indeed that there were changes or alterations to the MOI as suggested by the SABC's response to the draft report, then I think it would be important to establish if these amendments were submitted to CPIC as required by the Companies Act 71 of 2008. Minister Mutambi was indeed correct in the evidence she provided that clause 14.4 of the MOI had made provision for the removal of board members even prior to her taking office. The Broadcasting Act 4 of 1999 is outdated, and gaps in legislation, particularly the Principal Act, make it difficult to dissolve the SABC board in an event that it does not correct. Nor does the Act make provision for the board to be dissolved should board members resign, as it is the case with the current board. Such loopholes create an opportunity for the Companies Act to be then misconstrued as the principal act governing the SABC. Amendment to the Broadcasting Act with the intention of strengthening the legislation could be a possible resolution in the conflict of the application of relevant law, which is the Broadcasting Act 4 of 1999, and general law, which is the Companies Act. The insinuation or the implied insinuation by the two signed copies of the MOI that the Companies Act trumps the Broadcasting Act, I think should is a matter that should be addressed as a matter of urgency, and I think the minister should give clarity with regard to which MOI is lodged with the CPIC or which MOI is currently standing, as the SABC submitted evidence which is contrary to what she has said. Thank you, Chair.
Bo, if there's anything you want to add?
Thank you, Chair. I just thought perhaps for the purposes of the discussion of the honourable members, it'd be necessary to at least reflect on the minutes of the Portfolio Committee on Communications when the
minutes. The mic, sir.
My apologies. I just thought that it'd be necessary to reflect on the minutes of the Portfolio Committee on Communications when the minister appeared before the committee to present the actual MOI. This was following the removal of the three board members. And I actually used the parliamentary minutes as well as some extracts from the PMG website, because our minutes are a bit more summarized than those. So safe to say that during the meeting, the minister presented together with a legal advisor in terms of the MOI and how they use the MOI in the process. And during the discussions, of course, members raised a couple of issues in which, of course, the minister responded to say that the MOI was registered with the CIPC and was amended by her predecessor, which in this case was referring to former Minister Karim. And she further said that this particular MOI that she tabled to the committee was the one that was registered with CIPC on the 14th of May 2014. In her arguments, she went on to say that the process outlined in Section 71 in brackets 3 of the Companies Act did not involve the appointing body and the National Assembly. Certain interest groups may be unhappy with this, as this left the matter entirely in the hands of the SABC board. but this was what the legislature chose and intended. The powers of the National Assembly in terms of Section 15 in brackets 1 of the Broadcasting Act had not been diluted or removed by Section 71 in brackets 3 of the Companies Act. It was therefore not necessary to canvass the issue any further. There was an overlap of Section 15 in brackets 1 of the Broadcasting Act and Section 71 of the Companies Act in respect of the alleged misconduct or dereliction of duties. She further went on to explain that there were three procedures to remove SABC board members. The first one being the SABC board member may be removed by the president on the advice of the National Assembly after due inquiry upon recommendation by the SABC board in terms of Section 15 in brackets 1, brackets A of the Broadcasting Act. Secondly, removal by the president after finding of misconduct by a committee of National Assembly and the adoption of the resolution calling for that member's removal from office in terms of Section 15(1)(b) of the Broadcasting Act. And thirdly, removal by the resolution of the board where a director had alleged and the board had determined that he or she had neglected or been derelict in performance of the functions of a director in terms of Section 71(3)(b) of the Companies Act. She further said that the provisions of the Companies Act and the Broadcasting Act in this scenario were capable of concurrent application. She did not want a situation where the House was misdirected to be a forum to argue which laws were to be applied or not to, and to argue the interpretation of law. And she stated that this attempt must be defeated. She assured the committee that the three board members were given a fair inquiry and were given an opportunity to make representations. Section 71(3)(b) of the Companies Act empowers the board to remove board members who have been found to have abandoned fiduciary duties they are meant to uphold. She emphasized that the legal opinion of the parliamentary legal advisers was ignored the provisions of the Companies Act and Section 8A of the Broadcasting Act. Furthermore, the three board members have not disputed nor challenged the outcome. This committee is not the correct forum for legal submissions and the interpretation of the law. Following her explanation, therefore, it's safe to say that the committee then acknowledged the legal opinion of the minister, which contradicted the legal opinion of Parliament legal advisers. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any questions of clarity, or is it clearer to us? I'm not sure they're going to be able to respond, but they can do something about it. It's about empowering up. Let's take Honourable Singh and then Honourable Waters.
Okay.
And then, Singh, Waters, Khoza, Hillier, everybody?
Yeah.
Seems like everybody. Well, why don't we just start here and go around,
yeah,
everybody?
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just some comments and maybe questions. I don't know. Thank you for the summary of the three MOIs. That table is very helpful. And it shows also, Chair, if you remember our original report, paragraph 12.2, when it referred to the minister's oral.
When you say our original report, you say the one that
the very, very first. No, the first, the original. The original one, the working document, in 12.2, where we state there that the minister said, and I'll quote it, during the testimony, the minister denied that she had ever signed an MOI. We've got it in our report, and yet she signed two copies. So that's the first thing I wanted to highlight there. Then, the pages are not numbered, so I do apologize, but if you look at other submissions relating to the MOI, and it starts with in further input provided, there's three paragraphs on that page.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt so that we further can direct the meeting. No, I'm saying the first one.
Yeah.
You're basically saying that in the transcript, we're able to go and prove what you're saying.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, of course.
Okay, carry on.
Of course. Then if you look at this page that I've just referred you to, 8.12, during her evidence, the minister insisted that amendments to the MOI were effected in accordance with both the Broadcasting Companies Act.
She stated that although legislation did not require to do so, the ministry had consulted the board on the amendments. The company secretary did that, if I remember, but maybe via the ministry, that's okay, one thing. As a courtesy, before she, as a courtesy, and she said further on that there were no one raised any reservations, but the minutes prove that people raised reservations. That's another contradiction. Similarly, she also says in the same paragraph, she had also briefed the portfolio committee on the MII in She had consulted the board before, as a courtesy, before she submitted MII to the CIPR. Now, according to the evidence we were given, the last MII that was submitted was on 14th of April 2014, not June 2015. So again, she's contradicted herself. Just to say. Then lastly...
No, I wanted to know whether we are now discussing or are we raising questions.
Yeah.
I understood
well,
you to be saying we are asking questions for clarity.
Well, these are questions. I want to make sure my
facts
are right.
Understood.
Yeah, understood.
I'll be asking to understand.
Because if I've got the wrong end of the stick, I want to be rectified now, so I don't raise it when we have our findings.
What are the points that you're raising now?
So the fact that the minister... said there were no objections at the board, yet the minutes prove that. And then secondly, she said she did it as a courtesy before she submitted the MOI. Yet, there's no evidence that she actually did submit the MOI either. All right? Okay. Then, the last point, that's the last page, just for easy reference, just to do with paragraph 3, where the legal advisors state that it's difficult to dissolve the SABC board in the event that it's not correct, but my understanding of the Act, it's quite, well, not simple, but never should be simple to dissolve it, but the fact is there is a procedure in place to dissolve it, and I would put to you that I disagree with this paragraph in its entirety. The fact is section 15.1b says the National Assembly may, after due inquiry, and it should be an inquiry, can't be a flimsy decision, and by adoption of a resolution, take of the House, recommend the dissolvement of the board, right? And if you look further down, point two, the authoritative body may, and under C, dissolve the board if the resolution recommends the removal of all the members. So there is a procedure. So to say that there isn't one, I think is misleading. And in addition, then it also gives how the board should be, interim board should be appointed, which we've been fighting for, and I'm glad to say on Tuesday, they're starting the interviews for the interim board. But it says the interim board must be appointed within 10 days, etc., and the term of office, I think, is 6 months maximum. So there is a procedure set out in the legislation, Chair. And I just want to get clarity from the legal opinion as to why they would put this paragraph in the
document.
Ah, so researchers, sorry.
You just note them, honourable members, and you don't have to answer all of them because others are observations and whatever. But there's a specific question why you put that point in. If there are others, you can note them.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll just give you one round to respond. We're really about sharpening ourselves. You're not
Honourable
thing.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm not going to speak to the implementation of sections of the MOI. I think that's for another debate, how it was implemented. But what I want to understand quite clearly, which MOI is of force and effect, that anybody who is either the minister or the board, whoever has the authority to act on MOI, clauses in the MOI, can or cannot act. My understanding is that the only MOI which is of force and effect is the one that we were submitted here, Notice of Amendment, 14th October 2013, subsequently filed and recognized so by CIPC in May 2014. All other attempts to amend sections of the MOI or the MOI itself, in my opinion, were not filed, unless we have proof of that, filed with CIPC. And I want the researchers to tell us whether or not they have any evidence of any document that was filed subsequent to this 14th October 2013 document, which would actually amend sections of the MOI. And even though the Act says that when you amend and there's slight alterations, you can, the date of filing is the applicable date, not the date of acknowledgement and acceptance by CIPC, unlike when you originally send in an MOI. But even then, there isn't any documentation or any proof or any evidence before us to say that anything was filed before CIPC. So I just want you to clarify that the only MOI that is of force and effect is the one signed by Minister Yunus Karim in 2013, submitted and filed and accepted and adopted and recorded by CIPC in 2014. Then we can move on to the implementation of whatever from there. So I need that kind of clarity.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. I'm also interested in the issue of the MOI. I just wanted to find out from the researchers whether in their presentation and also in looking at the MOI that has been signed, did we as a committee come up with the, I mean, are we contradicted in terms of what we presented as our submissions? Because as Honorable Singh has said, the only MOI that is in force is the one that was signed by Honorable Kasim, the then minister. The then minister. So is there in our submissions where we contradict all this vis-a-vis what you have presented to us?
No, I was going to raise some of the issues that Honorable Singh raises. Because the discussions we're going to have on this MOI really become useless until we know what is the status of the MOI. We know from CIPC that they did not proceed the submission for the amendment of the MOI based on the documentation that they've given us. So it's clear that the minister did not submit the MOI, because when you submit amendments to the MOI, you get a letter of acknowledgement. Acknowledgement of receipt. So it makes the entire discussion and interpretation of the MOI, it renders it completely useless, because this is an MOI that is not in effect. And it affects delegation of authority framework and everything else that flows from it. So if either the SABC or the minister can give us that letter of acknowledgement of receipt, then it's a fruitless discussion. The entire SABC was run on an illegal document. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue that I wanted to raise was also what is currently in force of force and effect. And the issue therefore is, unless there was an administrative error on the side of CIPRO and there could be evidence presented that it was filed with CIPRO but they didn't process it on the system, we must accept that it is only the document that was signed by Minister Yunus Karim. What I would like to ask, if legal can confirm that...
Legal or research,
but legal as well, Chairperson. I would like to know, is there not a limitation on the period once an MOI has been amended? Is there not a limitation of specific dates according to the Companies Act that it must be submitted to CIPRO, failing which a new AGM should be called to in fact change again or to reinforce and to get a new resolution? Could we ask them, are there specific dates within which an MOI must be submitted? So in other words, if the minister works on a document
and a year has run and it has not been submitted, is that still a document that may be submitted in terms of the Companies Act? Could we just have the sort of timeline, how soon after, and to have confirmation that only an MOI that is registered and recorded as such on the system is a valid document. Then second issue is the research. Do we have any analysis of changes? You see, it's so difficult because we don't know who's the author of the unsigned document, undated and unsigned MOI. We know the one signed by the minister was the one that she submitted to us. That was her submission to us. But in her submission, it was not signed by the chairperson of the board. The document that was signed duly by the minister and both the minister and the chairperson of the board, that was a document that I believe the SABC gave us, the secretary to the company secretary. So, just clarity, but if we look at the one that minister signed, because it's the same as the one signed by Professor Magube, I believe so. If they could highlight some changes, if there were any changes, between the one originally signed by the minister and submitted to us. Did they perhaps analyze any amendments to the one that is currently with CIPRO, which is the one signed by Minister Karim, and the one that carries both signatures? But we must bear in mind, again, Chairperson, that there is a significant time that is passed since those signatures were, in fact, affixed to the document. Could we have the clarity from legal about that, as well as from research, if they have done? Because I've done an initial analysis, and I just wanted to see if it corresponds to mine and my analysis between the differences of the two documents. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we have three copies of the MOI that are in existence. Now, what one would appreciate is if we get from the research team, if they were able to get, their hands on some information of each of the MOI, I believe that there must have been some factors or the prevailing circumstances at that time that led to those different MOIs, if you know what I mean. If you see the way the clauses kept on changing, there must have been something that motivated for those changes. Now, one has to understand those. And also, I wanted you just, I know that you have mentioned it, but to just go through the three of them and say, the first one is this one. It was signed by this one and that one. And the second one was this one. It was signed by this one and that one. And probably as you go through the three of them, maybe you tell us as well, this is what was happening, because there's something I'm trying to establish here. There is a time when Mutambi was the only signature, and there is a time Karim was the signature, but then somehow Magove and Mutambi decided to sign together, and I don't understand what might have been comparing reasons that, hey, maybe they might have picked up something in the legislation or something like that. I don't know. But those are the areas, Chair, that are a bit of a concern to me. Thank you.
I'm covered, Chair. Thank
you. Chair, thank you. A few questions to ask. In the document that have been circulated, they are referring to three MOIs. Am I wrong if I say there are actually four MOIs? Because the fourth MOI would have been the one that was filed by Minister Karim with the CIPC. So my argument is that there are four MOIs. And the one that we are actually arguing that is the most credible one, which is formally signed,
and lodged with the CIPC. We do not have anything about it in this document. That's my view. But secondly, from the information that I find in the MOI that is lodged by Minister Karim at the CIPC, there is reference to, it's not amendment, but correction. Yeah. Now, it's difficult for me to understand whether does correction amounts to amendment, or it's two different things. Because it's also written in another language, so I don't know whether it's in the Bible or it is Greek. Some of the things that are written there, I don't understand them because I'm not a lawyer, I'm an ordinary member of parliament. Now,
that is late.
Oh yes, sometimes. But as we, in the documentation here that you presented, something is a bit amiss and it's going to create problems for us unless that matter is clarified. I know that we've had debates in the past about it, but I think it is important that we actually get it from yourselves as researchers as well as the legal team, clearly, independently, objectively, as to which of the two acts, because you refer to it as well, trumps the other. Because that's the argument that also comes from both the SABC in a particular way, as well as from the minister in a different way. We've got our own, but I would like to get an objective view. And if we do have a precedent, for instance, in courts where a decision was taken in a case of this nature, where we can get clarity, because we must make calculated and very educated decisions. And who has authority to amend the MOI? Is it the shareholder? Is it the board? Now, informed by whether it's Company Act Section 71 or in subsection 3, or perhaps between the MOI and the Company Act, which one is superior? I think it's very important that we understand it. It's very important that we understand the issue because arguments are made in some of the documents. And indeed, informed by that answer that you will give to this question, who then has authority to remove one ExCo member and two a non-executive member? Because the two doesn't seem to be falling into a same category. And who actually is the appointing authority? Because there are areas where we say the president is appointing authority. There are areas where we say the minister is appointing authority. There are times when we say actually parliament is appointing authority. I think if I can get that clearance, I will be better prepared for the meeting this afternoon. Thank you.
Honorable Chauke?
No. Chair, my point has been covered mostly to get the legal standing MOI. Which one? Because you'll remember, Chair, that the case of Masinga, when he took the minister to court, it was informed by the amendment to the MOI. Therefore, my understanding is that in the process, Masinga then lost the case, which gives the minister the power to amend. Now, what we must try and identify, Chair, which would help us, which MOI is standing, which MOI is standing, because it's clear that all the actions that happened at SABC were informed by the changing of the MOI. Now, if that MOI, the original one of 2013, was not amended, if the 2013 was not amended, it then suggests that everything that was done was illegal. I think we need that clarity, very important clarity. And maybe to make things easy for research, rather than, you know, I think you can engage CIPRO directly now, if they're mandated chair, just to get a confirmation from them in a report form.
those who are doing this inquiry on behalf of Parliament, they're accountable to Parliament now, by the way, as people under trade and industry. Get that information in writing from them. Because we are going to take a recommendation at the end on this particular position of the MOI, and it's important that it had to be informed by exactly which MOI that is spending. Because the rest of the three, if they have not amended, the first MOI which was launched in 2013, it means something else. So I'm saying that we need to get that information in detail. You know, I don't want to go back to the case, because the Masinga case was closed on the basis that it gives the minister the power to amend the MOI. But did she do that? If she has done that, it means that the 2013 MOI will be amended wherever it is. So let's get that information from Supreme.
Yeah, I know you guys have got a tough job. I think the real question is, and I think it was raised by most of the members that spoke, really the question is which MOI is enforced from the time that we started the commission, the inquiry. That, once that question is answered, everything else is answered. I mean, for us to venture into, and I know that we've been very strong about it, which law takes precedence. You know, the minister has said, and there is a bit of sympathy to that, the minister has said that this is not the forum to interpret the law. We can voice our presence, but we can't interpret it, so it will be very difficult. I mean, that we can put as part of our recommendation. But I really do think that if by the time we get to this point in our debate, or before Friday, we really need to know which, the primary question is which one is enforceable at the time or today. And that should be easy to get. I'm not sure, Anthea and everybody else, I'm sure that should be obtainable. Because that then answers our question. If it's the one that she, as minister, says she signed and lodged and we can prove it, then we can use that as the basis of the legality of our actions. If in the absence of that, what is the basis of what is the legality of our actions? You know, all the other questions I want to propose to members, because we'll debate this the whole day. Can I propose to members that we allow these young men, including Anthea, to answer that question for us? On the basis of the answer of that question, all these other points, Honourable Waters, you've raised and everybody else you raised, becomes part of the debate. Because otherwise our debate is in the dark. Is that okay, Honourable Members? One task we've given you, come to us and say to us, as things stand in South Africa Incorporated today, which MOI is enforceable and legal? And do whatever you need to do, including asking for support wherever you need to. I'm sure you could get that over the phone. All the ministers are here today. DGs are here today. Just do that for us. Is that okay? Is that doable? Is that doable?
Yes.
Come and say to us, we stand by our point that this is the only one that's enforceable because there's nothing else that we've got to. And if somebody else then disputes it, then our questions come into force. If you're saying there's another one, the onus should be on that individual to prove to us that he or she signed it. And I'm glad the minister's spokesperson is here, because when we get our recommendations, sir, and the minister actually is arguing, and I'm not saying this is going to be our recommendation, but the minister actually is arguing, if she's saying that it's on this one, it's going to help all of us by the time we get to the debate in the House, that indeed it is that one, there's the proof. Because we will go by, it's this one, and this is our proof. Is that okay? One task you've got, and you've got from today soonest to give us that answer. Everything else we would have noted and to be part of our discussion. Okay, let's take Mokwen and that person. Unless you've got a different view, that's for you. Let's take yours and that one.
Just to add, I think also just to help us in our discussion, it's important that we get the view of either the minister or the SABC on why they enforced this document. Maybe they received a letter.
letter that says, no, we acknowledge that we've received your amendments to the MOI, or what informed their decision to act on a document, if you understand what I'm saying, because I think that's going to then inform the reliability of the evidence that, that the minister and the SABC gave to us about this document. They must prove to us that they believed that it was enforceable.
I just want to talk on the last point. You probably weren't here earlier on. We had a big debate, not on this point that you raised it, but we had a big debate of introducing new evidence at this hour.
Mm-hmm.
And my fear is if we go and start asking questions now, we open the door for new evidence.
Yeah.
And that is why I'm saying from our own side, we've got all this evidence before us, four documents, I mean, four MOIs or three, doesn't matter. Ours is which one is the one that's valid.
Yeah.
Now, what they said or why they said it, it can't be our business. I'm just asking if you can live with that, Mukwena. Yes, sir.
No, I think you have just summarized what must happen. I think what will help us again is just to get that confirmation of a lodging the MOI. I'm just cutting what Honorable Ben is saying rather than opening up a lot of things. Just to simply get the confirmation, just to get some kind of a repeat of confirmation, I think that will suffice. Just to support you, Chair, on that.
All right, you've got one task, gentlemen. I'm getting whispers in my ears that has been confirmed already, but I'm not going to preempt what you're saying. Between 1, 2, 3, come to us and say to us, to the best of our ability, or to the best of our knowledge, this is the document that is enforced, that is enforced as we speak. Okay, and the onus will be on everybody else if they produce other documents to prove why they produce those documents. Niyabala at that point. Niyabala. Sure. It's going to eat on our time because 2:00. Maybe you must just give us your views. I don't know if we want to. Okay, let's take. Will you be able to give it us in 10 minutes? We've got 10 minutes. We open. Give us in 10 minutes and members can indicate if they want to ask questions. Or does somebody still want to ask on this one? On the MRI?
We can always come back.
No. I'm sorry. Speak, ma'am. I'm sorry.
No, she's surprising me. What did she?
Please, to the best of your ability, if you can just give us what you've got. Is there a document? There is.
Yes.
And members have got the document?
Yes.
Please talk to the document.
That's the one I don't have.
You don't have?
Yeah. Oh, no, I did get, sorry. I apologize.
Has everybody got the document? Is this contradictory evidence?
Yes.
Is that the one you're talking to?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Over to you.
No, thanks, Chair. Good afternoon to yourself and the honourable members and the guests. I have prepared a 3-page document, basically to speak to, in brief, issues relating to the contradictory evidence. I was asked to go through the bundle of evidence, pick up what one found to be contradictory. But I thought I could do that for the entire month and it might not assist the committee. So the presentation, in a way, tries to capture certain principles, which I think would assist honorable members.
Mike is
John.
The
anticipation is that these principles would assist honorable members in evaluating the mountain of evidence that is before the honorable members, particularly the contradictory aspects. Firstly, the point I want to make is that was there some contradictory evidence from certain witnesses? Not everyone who has testified at the inquiry. It is imperative to know that not every contradiction is material, and therefore relevant to the issues to be determined by the inquiry. The point I'm making there is the committee does not necessarily have to bother itself with every contradiction than Peter. Or his imperative is the assessment of what the terms of reference require of the committee and the evidence that would enable the committee then to report on the terms of reference. I think that's the first point that I'm making. The second point I'm making is that not every contradiction is motivated by the desire to mislead the committee or dishonesty or lies. Of course, there are a number of reasons why witnesses would give different accounts for the same incident witnessed by different people. It could well be bad recollection of the incident, might well be a genuine mistake. Of course, at times it might well be dishonest. So it remains for the committee then to, in its evaluation of the contradiction, to determine what is it that motivated this particular contradiction. Make the point that to get to that point, the committee would require to assess the evidence in its totality, including objective facts. I've just witnessed honorable members around the MOI. I think what honorable members were doing with the MOI was a classic example of trying to understand this contradiction and how to resolve which one to believe and which one not to believe. Thirdly, the credibility of witnesses plays an important consideration in the analysis of contradictory evidence. Relevant factors in this regard include, note that they are not limited to, an assessment of the performance of the witness under oath, whether the witness was honest, whether the witness's testimony is corroborated by other witnesses, or objective facts. For instance, I know there is a question around the evidence of I might come back when we deal specifically with some of these issues. But of course, common sense plays an important role in the evaluation of evidence. Fourthly and naturally, I did not, in this document, focus on the contradictions of witnesses who testified. I only focused on the witnesses who testified under oath and were subjected to questions by the committee. I did not deal with the written comments that were submitted by the SABC to the committee for obvious reasons. The following are some of the contradictions that were picked up. And I have selected these contradictions mainly to make the points that I've highlighted above. For instance, the contradictions on whether Ms. Duda and Ms. Mhobo were related to Ms. Dinapuv. I mean, how does that assist the committee in reporting on its mandate, on whether or not the court is charged with fraud? My view, such a contradiction is immaterial, is irrelevant. The cost of the TNA breakfast, there's conflicting versions there, but I think there is sufficient evidence at the disposal of the committee to make finding around the cost factor. The gross political interference, again, Shabalala said there was, and Dr. Ngubane said there wasn't. The committee will have to weigh the performance of the two witnesses that appear before them in coming to a determination. Again, there was a lot of evidence around the selling of archives. It is an important issue. Whether it is an important and a critical issue for the committee to report on its work around its mandate, I would submit not, but it is certainly an important aspect because it speaks to the assets of the SABC and where they should be kept. It is not perhaps an issue that could well be better served if the committee were to defer to other, I mean, rather to the successive boards to look into these issues. The point I'm making here is the committee does not have to concern itself with each and every contradiction that it comes across. The salary increases to Mr. Tsoneng, sorry, the meeting about the 500,000, I mean, whether the meeting was there or not, really won't assist the committee in coming to a recommendation whether the board discharges fiduciary duties, because it's an incident that took place even long before this current board. The issue around whether who took a decision on whether Mr. Mutsoneng should attend board meetings, whether it's Dr. Nguban or whether it's the board, I think, once again, it's not a material issue for purposes of reporting on the mandate of this committee. The MOI, the different versions, I just want to also agree that perhaps the relevance of the MOI, as I understood it, as the evidence leader, was to the effect that it contributed to the weakening of the governance within the SABC. Now, there's evidence, whilst the minister seems to have come up saying she did not initiate the amendment, she does take responsibility ultimately in saying she did amend the MOI. Whether the MOI, I think that is the question that the researchers have been mandated now to look at, whether that was subsequently registered with the CIPC is a different question. But insofar as the confirmation that she amended the MOI, and in that amendment, remember what is critical about the amendment of the MOI are the powers of the board that were taken from the board and given to the executives. The minister has not disputed that in her testimony. So that is not in dispute. She might have advanced reasons why she thought it was the best thing to do. But the reality of the situation is there's testimony before the committee that the impact of that decision had catastrophic effects. That is not disputed. So based on that, the committee could still make its findings and recommendations in respect of that, because as far as I could assess that, there's no contradiction. So the point I'm making here is, in the assessment of some of these contradictions, it is imperative to highlight what is it that we wanted to get by pursuing a particular line of questioning. Did we manage to do that? Were contradictions, whether those contradictions are material or not. With the 63 salary increase of Mr. Mutsoneng, we need not look any further. I mean, there's a public protector's report. Mm-hmm. That confirms it. Whether Dr. Mubane likes it or not, he's never challenged that. And in law, that report stands. Whether Mr. Mutsoneng's appointment as acting CEO was done through the board, led by or testified by Dr. Ngubane, or it was done by Dr. Ngubane, testified by Mr. Molefe, is it really material for purposes of the committee reporting on whether or not this particular board that will be able to discharge its responsibility? I would submit not. If in the event that it is material, you need not look any further than the public protector's report entitled When Governance and Ethics Fail, where the public protector finds that it took the board more than 3 months to confirm Mr. Mutsoneng's acting appointment. question then is, before the 3 months that the board took to confirm the appointment, who had appointed Mr. Musa before that? Because for the 3 months before his confirmation by the board, he was acting. That's what the report said. So there are objective facts that are there, that assist the comment. I mean, the issue of the multi-choice agreement, again, is a matter of, that is subject to personal or to legal interpretation. And I think there is a litigation that is going on, and the courts would pronounce on this issue. Is it, again, an issue that this committee will be incapacitated in reporting on its mandate to the House? I submit the committee is not incapacitated. So, Chair, in brief, I hope I have outlined the few principles or guidelines that the committee should preoccupy itself in dealing with some of the contradictory evidence. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Any comments from members? Honourable Waters.
Chair, for clarity, just want to know with regards to the MOI, whether it was filed at CIPC or not, were the amendments made by the Minister applied at the SABC? And then just for clarity as well, the issue around the appointment of Mr. Motsenang as a COO. I hear the legal advice around with regards to the acting position, although he acted for 3 years, I think it was. It wasn't 3 months. It was a long time. But it is material with regards to the permanent appointment. The issues around who decided, political pressure was applied, etc. So I do think the process in which he was appointed permanently are very material to what we're dealing with. That's my view. You may have a point about the acting position, but certainly the permanent position. And then just on the MOI again with the Minister, I mean, I hear the legal advice saying that she clarified matters. She contradicted herself, and I want to put that on record again. From the word go, she contradicted herself, and it was only when the signed MOI was made public that the Minister sort of backtracked after stating that she hadn't signed the MOI at all. I just want to put that on record. Thank you.
Right. I suggest that on record would help us after lunch, because
yes.
Now it's really
yeah.
just information
yeah,
that you can
clarity.
Receive.
Yeah.
And can I suggest,
yeah.
honourable members, that the MOI matter, I thought we agreed early on,
yeah.
it depends on the status of the MOI.
Yeah.
But the point you're making, sir, that at one point you said you'd never signed it, and at another point you said she signed it. It's a different matter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a different matter that you said this on Monday and you said something else on Tuesday,
yeah.
which is fine. But which one is the standing one is the most important question other than your one, because then it affects everything else that has happened in terms of what you were saying, weakening the governance and so on. So other than that, can you, sir, answer other questions? I'm just asking you to leave the MOI one until we have that one, if that's all right. Then take, I know, I recognize Chauke and then Tilia. And then you can respond.
Thank you very much, Chair. And you have made that point on the statement vis-a-vis evidence under oath. Yesterday we dwelled much around the issue of SABC, which you in fact correctly put it under statement or comment. Just elaborate for me that point, because I want to locate, because it's more contradicting evidence that came when you deal with SABC. It contradicted the rest of the people that was called. What is the status, therefore, of the statement vis-a-vis the work that we do? If you can just elaborate for me, just a little bit, just a clear understanding around that point of
the space, I mean, space house submission that was made by.
Chairperson. Just on a point of order, I'm taking Honorable McQuenna's place for points of order. All these questions of elaboration and everything else, from the way I see it, is going to take time. It's now 1:10. We will be forced to go into the House by 1:55. It's not going to leave us any time to meet our biological needs. So I would suggest that we come back as scheduled and let Advocate Vanara still make himself available so we can deal with some of these issues instead of just passing them by. That's my humble request.
I agree with you, KZN caucus. Killian was the only other person that I'd identified for a question. Why don't you allow Killian to ask the question so that he applies his mind without necessarily responding? Because you're the only other one. Can you take notes? Killian, you'll be the last one, and then you have an hour to go and think about the responses. Killian.
Jefferson, yes, thank you very much to Advocate Vanara. I must say I thought I had in mind a different type of document, but it's a very useful document. I was hoping that Advocate Vanara, having gone through all the testimony, would have listed the material matters, because, you know, his submission really refers to materiality. And I was hoping that we could have that so that we can also just go and verify, you know, what is the status of the documentation presented? Were these people before us, et cetera, et cetera? So I was expecting a different document, but I don't discard this document. Secondly, I just wanted to ask a question. He says it depends on the credibility of the witness. Would he agree that statements made such as that X and X are related to so and so also affect the credibility of witness? And can he just remind us when we return? I think it was, in fact, Dr. Ngubane who stated as a matter of fact that Ms. Mokobo and Ms. Duda were related and we received different information later on. Can he just please confirm that? Because that is the type of matters that when we deal with the witnesses before us and which of the evidence should prevail over the other, it would have a material impact on us when we decide this matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We meet half an hour after the budget speech in M46.
An hour after the budget?
Half an hour.
Half, okay. M46.
30 minutes after.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. What we...
Yeah,
so I'm taking a 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock.